So we are holding on Dalodoma Bays, about 10 lines from the bottom. The line begins in the Tira, 9 lines from the bottom, yeah. Okay, we discussed like this. We have the Mishnah told us that you have one person whose fields surround the other on three sides, and he put up fences. Then we said the other person is not obligated to join in the cost of those fences. Either we talked about because he's not gaining anything from it, or there was no requirement to put up fences in the first place, or whatever. Then Rabbi Yossi said that if he went and fenced in the fourth side, then we make him pay for everything. So we started talking what
50,
it 50. Well, so we just well, right, but we started discussing what it means. First of all, who's the one who fenced it in? We started by saying that it doesn't matter who fenced it in. Then we had a machlokas Rav Huna and Rav Huna versus Chiya Barav. How much does he have to pay? Does he have to pay 50% of the actual cost of what was put up, or 50% of the price of the price of a fence of cheap sticks? Sticks at the cheap price, meaning two-thirds of the price, which the last thing we said was we could argue the Tanakama would agree you have to pay something. Rabbi Yossi would say you have to pay more. What is the amount? According to Chiya Barav, you can say that the Tanakama would say all you have to pay for is the cost of a watchman, because you could argue that's all I needed is during the harvest season, during the growing and harvest season or whatever, is have somebody to watch it at a cheap price. I don't need a fence that's there all year round. Whatever it would be smaller than the amount of any kind of fence. As opposed to, Rabbi Yossi would say, no, you have to pay at least for some kind of fence. There is, by the way, this gets into the Gemara back in Bava Kamma. We learned about this in connection with the question of Zenan of Zelai Chaser. If one person is gaining and the other person is not benefiting, that we said over there, the Maskana, the one who's gaining from it doesn't have to pay. So again, the classic case was that he's living in the other person's Chaser, which is not one that's usually used for renting out, and he himself has a place to live. Now over here, you have a case of Zenan of Zelai Chaser. He's gaining from the fact that there's a fence, and the other guy on the face of it is not losing. So why should he have to pay towards? The fence? Rashi brings it up as well, but the Gemara actually brings it up over there. In Bava Kamma. One answer is. So there are a couple of different ways of looking at it. One is that maybe in this case, if we assume that in our Mishnah, the one who made the fourth wall is the Nikif, the one on the inside, well, he's actually doing something to show, it's not just like in the other case where he just lives there and it's a passive act. Here he's doing an active thing. Therefore, maybe we should obligate him to pay for the others. Or another way of looking at it is the Gemara talks over there that the person on the outside can argue the fact that your field is in the middle of mine causes me to have to put up more fencing than I otherwise would. Like this, for example, if your field wasn't in the middle, I wouldn't need a fence here at all. Or even if we're talking about the fence on the outside of his field, same principle. If your field wasn't in the middle, the perimeter of my field would be smaller because your field is taking up some space in the middle of it, whatever. So therefore, there is a certain chaser. Okay, but still, he has the ability to argue that. Anyway, so we left off, that was one answer, that the Tanakama of our Mishnah would say that the guy on the inside only has to pay Agar Natira, half the value of somebody to guard the place, of a watchman, which again, we said yesterday that would help, first of all, to prevent Hezekiah, because he'll keep people from loitering around, and second of all, in case we're talking about people coming and taking stuff, then he'll guard against that also. Whereas Rabbi Yossi would say you have to actually pay for something of the cost of the fence, but maybe like Chiya Barav would say no more than the cost of the sticks, even if the fence was actually a solid fence built out of stones or whatever. Okay. The Iboy Seima, that's where we're
holding. Nothing labor.
Nothing, no. That goes into the materials, I guess. Yeah, I don't know. The Iboy Seima, or another possibility.
No, labor meaning putting the stick.
Oh, yeah, no. Because he could have done it himself in spirit and then not have to pay for it yet. Okay, the Iboy Seima, or possibility number two, how to explain our Mishnah, is Rishona Shnei or Shlishi Stick of Inayu. Maybe Rabbi Yossi and the Tanakama are arguing about what about does he have to pay towards the first three walls? Tanakama Sava Revius Udiyovle. Maybe the Tanakama would hold, sure, okay, I agree you do have to pay the cost of the fourth wall, half the cost of the fourth wall, but not the first three. Aval Rishona Shnei or Shlishi Stick of Inayu. He shouldn't have to pay him for the cost of the first three. Now, why not? Rashi says the reason is because, let's say, for example, those walls have been there for a while. If the guy took him to Beis Din or would have taken him to Beis Din all this time, Beis Din would have said he's not obligated to pay, he's not gaining anything from those walls. Therefore, it's a concept called cum dina. It's like the matter has already been established. We're not going to reopen it again just because a fourth wall was built. That's how Rashi learns it.
So the two walls determine the outcome of the fourth.
No, if the fourth one is built, then the Tanakhama would say that you only have to pay towards the cost of the fourth wall. You don't have to pay towards the cost of the first three, because those already you were exempted from at the time. First, this gives a different logic of it. That sure, you know, if a person is going to have a fence on the fourth side, sure, he's willing to pay for that. Now he is fenced in. Now his field is protected. So therefore, we can assume that would be the case. We can't necessarily assume that he would have wanted to pay for the first three walls back when they were built. Rav Yosi suffered a shonish shneir shlishis namiyo. Whereas you could say Rav Yosi of our Mishnah would hold that he has to pay him towards the first three walls as well. We do reopen that case. Because this is the same logic, in other words, because either way, he's benefiting from all four walls, and therefore he's benefiting, the guy on the inside is benefiting from the fact that there are now four walls between him and the outside guy, or between the wall on the outside of the outside guy, according to the different explanations that we talked about yesterday. And therefore, one way or the other, why should he only have to pay for the fourth wall? He should pay for all four of them as well, yeah.
But this first three he didn't initiate.
Okay, but nevertheless, now he's benefiting from all four equally. But either way, we don't have to say that either the Tanakhama or Rav Yosi would say that he has to pay any more than the value of sticks, even if it was a solid wall.
Well, how much more could he pay?
No, that's the point. In other words, four walls of sticks could cost $10.
Okay.
Four walls of stone could cost $100. So yeah, okay. Or yet a third possibility, how to explain the Mishnah, the machlokas between Rav Yosi and the Chachamim could be, who is it that put up that fourth wall? And anyway, up until now, we've been assuming that the same din applies regardless who put it up. Maybe that could be the crux of the machlokas. The Tanakhama sub, a time into Amon Nikas, the Megagul and all of the Koil. The Tanakhama might hold only if the one on the inside put up the fourth wall. Then we will make him pay for everything, because by doing that, he demonstrated that he likes the fact that there are three walls there already. He intends to use them from now on. Therefore, he should have to pay towards the cost of them, as we'll learn a similar concept later on Daf Vav, about a war between two Chaseras. But the Tanakhama would say, if the one on the outside put up the fourth wall, then he's only obligated to pay towards the cost of that fourth wall, because that's the one that is a new thing now where he can argue you're now getting a direct benefit from it. The other three, again, we would say, come dinner, what's done is done already. Whereas Rav Yosi might hold, doesn't matter who it is that put up the fourth wall. In Amon, the Goder, if somebody put up that fourth wall, Megagel and all of the Fakol, and we will make him pay for all of them toward the cost of all four walls.
So the one who's building
it doesn't matter who built the fourth wall. Either way, the one on the inside is going to have to pay towards the cost of it. But again, not necessarily that he has to pay for any more than six. Which, by the way, means it comes out then actually that
goes to the inner.
That means according to Rav Yosi, it would mean either one.
It could mean either.
It could mean either one. Yeah.
So that's what I'm saying. So either one,
regardless which one that does it, he'd have to do that. Lishnachrin, or another version. It's not really a different version of the Gemara. It's actually different versions between the Gaonim and Rashi. So the printers put them one after the other, but in the original Gemara, as it came out from Ravina and Ravashi, it would have been either one or the other. Okay. Lishnachrin, a makif benikif ibinayo. Another way of looking at it is that, yes, the machlokas between them is who did this fourth wall, the makif, the one on the outside, or the nikif, the one on the inside. Namely, Tanakhama sabar im goda makif is a revius nami yoyle. The Tanakhama would hold, regardless who put up that fourth wall, either way, he has to pay him. Rav Yosi sabar, whereas maybe according to this way of looking at it, Rav Yosi might actually say that it's lakula. Unlike all of the assumptions we were making until now, that Rav Yosi is trying to be machmer over the Tanakhama, maybe we could learn it that he's being maful. That, im amad nikif agadus erubiyas udiyoflay, only if the one on the inside put up the fourth wall, only then does he have to share in the cost of all of it. Degoli died to denichale, because by putting up that fourth wall, he demonstrated that he likes the idea of having walls around his field. Avin godem makif la yoflay the midi, but if, according to Rav Yosi, maybe if the makif put up the fourth wall, he wouldn't owe him anything because he didn't demonstrate that he needs it at all, that he has any interest in it. Okay. So those are all the various ways. So we have all these different ways so far of explaining the machlokas of Rav Yosi and the Chachamim. The point is, none of them necessarily contradict either Rav Huna's position that the payment is done according to the actual type of wall that was done. If it's a stone wall, then stone. If it's brick, then brick. If it's chutz of adafna, then chutz of adafna, etc. Whereas according to Chiyah Barav, you only have to pay him the minimum cost that would have cost to put up a fence of sticks. And so far, the Mishnah could be understood according to that also.
Are we going to clarify further or not?
Well, we're going to talk about actually, yeah, we're going to, from the next story, it's going to come out who the halacha is like between the two of them. Yeah. We know already the halacha is like Rabbi Yossi of our Mishnah, but what it means between Chiya Barav and Ravuna, that we're going to see. So, the case is like this. Runya, and that was his name, we met him in Baba Kama, Baba Matzia, towards the end, we said that he was Ravina's shasla. He was an artist who Ravina had hired to plant vineyards for him and then take care of them. We had a brief story over there. So now, Akhi Ravina. Yeah, we had the story over there, yeah.
What was the story?
So the story over there was that Ravina, that there was a hefsid, the damage was caused over there, and Ravina fired him, and he went to Beis Din, he went to Rava to complain, and Rava explained to him that a shasla is one of those people you can fire without notice. They're always on notice, that if there's any damage, then you're out of here. This same Runya, Akhfei Ravina me'abir rechosev. Ravina surrounded him on four sides, meaning Ravina had four fields all surrounding Runya's field, and he put up fences on all four sides. Again, according to Rashi, it would be fences on the inside separating Runya's fields from his. According to many of the other Rabbi Migash and others, it would be on the outside of his own field. Yeah. Okay. So he says to Runya, Havli kama de gadri. Give me in proportion to the amount of fence I put up. In other words, he said, according to Rav Huna, I hold like Rav Huna, you should have to share in half the cost. So he didn't want to give him. Well, okay, so Ravina figured, okay, maybe Runya would want to say maybe the halacha is not like Rav Huna, maybe the halacha is like Chiya Barav. There is, by the way, such a concept in halacha. When it comes to things in the Gemara, generally, I mean, in the Gemara, when you have a machlokes like that, it's usually decided one way or the other, unless the Gemara ends up saying take or whatever, or unless the Gemara just leaves it unresolved. But many times you find with the machlokes Rishonim, where there's not necessarily any way to resolve it because we don't have any higher authority to appeal to, there's a concept in Shulchan Aruch that I think we'll come across it later in this Masechta also, where one or the other of the Baal HaJinim can say, Kimli, I hold that the halacha is like Ploini, which supports my case.
In other words, someone can say that?
In other words, for example, let's say you have a machlokes between the Rosh and the Rambam, let's say, on some point of halacha. The Rambam's position might favor Reuben. The Rosh's position would favor Shimon. Shimon, I would have the ability to say, Kim Lee, I hold that the halacha should be like the Rosh.
Then
Beis Din will have to make some kind of pshara. But they can't say, for example, they can't say, look, the Rambam says that's the halacha, therefore pay up. So he has the ability to say, Kim Lee, but I hold like the other opinion. This is a similar kind of thing over here. Yeah.
What kind of pshara do they do?
They would have to make some kind of pshara. They'd have to make some kind of compromise. Yeah, whatever. Anyway. So Ravina tells him, okay, happily the fikan and mizil, fine. Then let's go like Rav Bar Avuna. Give me the value. Chiya Barav, rather. Let's go like Chiya Barav. Give me the minimum amount. Also, lo yahiv leih. He still didn't give him. Okay. Well, so Ravina figures, okay, maybe then he holds like one of the answers that we said that maybe the Tanakama of our Mishnah would say you only have to pay agam natira, only the payment for a watchman. Maybe Runya holds the halacha is not like Rabbi Yossi, but rather like the Tanakama of our Mishnah. So he says, Habli Agron Tiroso. So he says, give me at least the pay towards the watchman. Still lo yovla, he still didn't give him. Now, so what does that mean? Maybe what it means at this point is it's not that Runya is being a rusher or something and not wanting to pay his fair share, but maybe he holds, I have no need for these fences at all. It's a bika, so I'm not worried about Hezekriya. And the produce in my field, I'm not worried that anybody's going to come in and take it, or animals or whatever. I'm not worried about that. What's in there, okay, you know, I'll harvest what there is. If it gets
a chiddush in a way.
Well, so what happened? So Ravina figured I'm going to test that to see whether that is true. I'm going to test that to see whether in fact that is the case, that Runya doesn't care what happens with the produce of his field. So. Yoimachad, have a kagodudikli. One day, Runya is harvesting dates in his field. Amalei Lari, say so. Ravina tells his artist, Zil shkirmine tiburadahini. Go take from him a cluster of dates while he's there. See how he reacts. Ozalaf, so the guy goes to take the dates. Ramabe kola, and Runya started yelling at him, get out of here. Showing, obviously, he does care what happens to his produce. Oh, hello. So now, so the question is, though, but how are you allowed to steal from somebody even as a joke or even to make him angry or whatever? We know you're not allowed to do that. So there's a couple of different answers that Mephoshim give. One of them is he wasn't telling him to actually take them. Just pretend like you're about to take them, see how the guy reacts. Another possibility is maybe he had a right to halacha. Look, he holds that he's owed money in halacha. If the guy's not paying up, he's entitled to take something from him in payment of it. Anyway, so Amalei, so Ravina tells him, aha, golis adaitach, the meinach nichalach. Well, then it shows, obviously you are pleased by having a fence around that protects your property. Look, lo yehei ele izabalma. Fine, let's say it wasn't my artist. Let's say it was his ghost wandering in about to take your produce. Mila bonitudosa, wouldn't you need a fence to protect yourself against them? So that being the case, you do obviously get some benefit out of this fence, and therefore you should be paying towards it.
By the way, what's the difference between Rav Huna and Rav
Chia? So we said Rav Huna had held that you have to pay half the cost of the actual fence. If it was a stone, then half the value of stone. If it was brick, half the value of brick, etc. Chia Barav had said you only have to pay half. Chia Barav says, no matter what the material was used, you only have to pay as if it was a fence of sticks at the cheap price, two-thirds of the price. Yeah.
Okay, great.
Okay. Okay. So anyway, so l'chura, you should have to pay something. Amalei, so Rooney answers, why? I don't need a fence to keep out goats. Or if that's all I'm worried about is that goats are going to wander in. All I need is to chase them off, to yell at them, and then chase them off. I don't need a fence to keep them out. So Ravina tells him, fine, if you're going to say that you need something to scare off the goats, that means you need a person. So at the very least, we're talking about a watchman. No. So, also Chamei de Rava. So they brought the Din Torah to Rava. Amalei, the Rava tells Runya, Zil Paise B'mayadi Fais, go appease him with what he's willing to be appeased with. Meaning, in other words, look, technically, the din should be, like Ravina said originally, you should have to pay, like Rav Huna said, the full value of half the cost of the actual fence that he put up. This is how we see the halacha is like Rav Huna. However, fine, Ravina was willing to go down. He was willing to compromise. He was willing to accept. He was willing to go according to Chiyah Barab. He was even willing to go according to the possibility that we're talking only a Shomer. Fine, at the very least, though, you got to pay that. Fine, he's willing to go along with that. That's what you got to pay. The Eloi.
I don't want that speech to think.
No, not you. You're not. I said you're not in.
The Eloi, and if not, the Eloi de inin alach dina kirav huna alibed rabbi Yosi. And if not, then I'm going to be machmer, not machmer. I'm going to hold the Eloi. If you don't pay him at least that minimum amount that he's willing to compromise on, then I'm going to tell you the actual technical halacha is like Rav Huna, like Rav Huna's understanding of Rav Yosi, that you are going to have to pay the full cost of half of all of those four walls of the actual material they were made out of. The better you should be willing to pay him for his agar natira and then get out of it that way.
He accepted that,
I guess, yeah. Okay. Another case that involves Runya and Ravina. So according to Rashi, this next case doesn't directly have to do with the previous case. We're only mentioning, since we had one story involving Runya's in Ravina's field, so we mention another one of them. After we learn the words of the Gemara, we'll talk about Tosfos, learn there is more of a connection between them. Okay. So another case, Runya Zovan Ara Ametzra de Ravina. Runya won the same Runya.
Right now the halacha is like Rav.
So the halacha is like Rav Huna. However, since Ravina was saying that he's willing to go down and even accept that the halacha is like Chiyah Barab's version of the Chachamim, which is the most makel, then fine.
Yeah, in this case.
Okay. So Runya Zovan Ara mates with the Ravina. Runya one time bought a piece of land by the edge of Ravina's field. So the case of Bamesra comes in. So Ravina thought, as we learned in Bava Matia, that he should have the ability to remove him on the basis of the din of Bamesra. In other words, pay him off for the amount that he paid for the field and take it over for himself. That's the din of Bamesra. Omalei Rav Safra Breder of Yeva, Ravina. So, however, Rav Safra Breder of Yeva tells Ravina, Amri Inshi, you know, it's like people say, Arba'o l'tsala. Four for the Salah. Now, what does that mean? Rashi gives three different explanations.
Wow.
Yeah, because it's not so clear what it means. First, Rashi says like this. His Rebbeim explained as follows. Salah means a poor leather worker. Salah means a rich one. So he's telling him like this. You know, whether you're poor or rich, either way, you need the same amount of food. So therefore, this poor guy, Runya, just bought this field. He needs it for his parnasa. Look, you're saying, Vosisa Yashavatov. You're saying, do the right thing and let me take over this field so I have my fields contiguous. You should do Vosisa Yashavatov. Give him a chance to have a field for his own parnasa. Okay. That's explanation number one. In other words, Ravina is arguing on the basis of Vosisa Yashavatov, I should have the ability to... That's the basis of the din of Bar Mitzvah that we learned from Bar Mitzvah is Vosisa Yashavatov. like this. I have a field over here. You want to buy the field over here. You could just as well buy a field someplace else. You could just as well buy a field here. Mashenkin, for me, it'll be easier if I have it all contiguous. I'll be able to take care of it all together. So Ravina wanted to exercise his rights based on that. According to this first explanation, Rav Safra is telling him, the fact of the matter is, the poor guy needs parnasa, give him a break. He needs a field for his parnasa. It would be valtisa yashvat to leave him the field that he already bought rather than making him mutrazich to go buy another field.
He didn't have any field.
He didn't have any field until that point, I guess, yeah. Okay, however, Rashi says, I don't like that explanation, because for one thing, the word sala does not mean a leather worker, it means the actual leather itself. So, explanation number two is, Rashi says,
and what's the arva?
Arva means four. So according to the first explanation, it means a poor leather worker needs four loaves of bread to feed his family for a day, so does a rich one. So in other words, he needs the parnasa just as much as you do, basically. Second explanation is the four refers to how much you pay for the leather. A person who's going to be working with leather, like a shoemaker or whatever, he spends four zuzim to buy leather, and then he also needs to spend another four zuzim to have somebody tan it. So that's salah for the leather, salah for the tanners. So he has a lot of expenses. So again, do up tisa yashba tov, let him keep this field for his panasa. Then
wait.
That's the basis of the whole concept of bar mitzvah. So in this case, it applies more generally. But that's the same. According to these two explanations, so far Rav Safra is telling him, give the poor guy a break. Then the third explanation, Rashi says, is again going back to a poor or rich person need to eat the same amount. The deal is, in other words, that. So now what are you going to have? Before we said that Runya had the one field in the middle of Ravina's field. Now he's going to be buying another one outside of it. So in that case, then fine. Okay, it's not contiguous, but at least it's close enough together, for example, that he can, for example, hire one watchman to watch both of them, for example, and that way it'll be much less expense for him than if you were to buy a field all the way here where his expenses are double. Those are Rashi's three explanations. Tosfos asks on that. Okay, very nice. There's a concept in halacha called ein merachem in badin, meaning very nice. It's very nice to be nice to the poor person, etc. However, the din is a din. Fine. What is Rav Safra telling him? If the fact of the matter is the din is that he can exercise his right to bar mitzvah, fine. He can tell him, yes, you're a bar mitzvah, but be a nice guy to him. Like this, it makes it sound like he's saying the whole din doesn't even apply. So what does that mean?
We're saying, implying that it doesn't apply to a din?
No, in other words, that you should go look at Mishra's Adin by all means, but it's not the job of a dayan to tell you to. It's not the job of a dayan to tell you to have rachmanis. The job of the dayan is to tell you the din. The actual din. Beyond that, you go look at Mishra's Adin. Here it sounds, yeah. Anyway, also Tosfos asks, what are these two stories doing together? I mean, if we're just trying to tell all the stories of Runya and Ravina, we have the third one over there in Bava Metzia about where Runya was fired for the hefset over there. So now, Tosfos says like this. What it means is like this. You had, again, we talked about, you had Runya in the middle, you had Ravina on all four sides. Now Runya went and bought a field over here. So his field, not over here, rather, he bought a field like over here. So it adjoins his own field on one side, but it adjoins Ravina's fields on three sides. So Ravina thought to say, well, I'm more of a bar mitzvah than he is. Now, we learned in Bava Metzia, that's not really the case. The fact of the matter is, any bar mitzvah has equal rights with any other one. We said there that if all four of them come together, we split it crosswise, but if one of them goes and gets it ahead, then he's the one. So therefore, so that's Rav Safra is pointing out to him that you don't have any more rights of bar mitzvah than he does. The whole point of bar mitzvah is to have your fields contiguous. So in that case, he's just as much of a bar mitzvah as you are. In that case, you don't have
any sides.
Regardless how many sides, because he at least has one side. Yeah. Then Tosfos gives yet another explanation, which is when we say he bought a field next to one of Ravina's fields, it means Runya himself was the shasla. He was the orit working on Ravina's various fields. He had his own field in the middle. He had the various fields around them where he's working as an orit, and now he bought a field over here. So, according to this explanation, Rav Safra informs Ravina, you should know, you thought that you're not, you thought he's not a bar mitzvah and you are because you own these fields. However, since he works them and he has a certain part ownership in them in that case, after all, it's easier for him to take care of your field and contiguous his field as well, then Arbar la Salah, you have to pay for the leather.
So what does Tosfos say?
So that's Tosfos says, therefore,
that's...
that the force, the sala is the leather, sala law is the tanner. Just as you have to pay four zuz for the leather, so also you have to give four zuz for the person who tans it, meaning that even though the tanner doesn't own the leather, same idea. In other words, runya is just as much of a bametzer for being an artist on this field as you are for actually owning the character.
Equal right.
Yes.
What was
one more? In Bava Metzia, we had the case where he was a shakla, where he was, his job was to plant vineyards and take care of them, and there was a hefsid, and therefore Ravina fired him.
And he went to Rava,
and Rava told him that a shakla is one of those people who can be fired without notice because they're always on notice.
Right. He made a mistake.
Right.
When he did.
Yeah. Right. Okay. One more explanation, and then we'll go to the Mishnah. There's yet a sixth explanation that one of the Rishonim, I think it's the Rimigash, gives. I don't remember. He says the four that we're talking about over here, not four loaves of bread, not four zuzim, but rather four amos. The tzala or the salala, the rich or the poor craftsmen, the way Rashi explains sala and salala, are both going to get the same four amos of a gravesite after 120. So in other words, he's telling Ravina, again, you know, give the guy a break. Realize, in other words, that after 120, you're not going to have all these fields anyway. All you're going to have is your dalet amos. So therefore, give him a break and let him keep the field that he has.
Trivial, so the 4 meters of the agada.
4 meters, huh? Okay.
Four people in the agada.
Not following. Okay.
The
four sons in the agada. Okay. Mishnah says, Koiso chotzer should not fall. If the wall of a chotzer falls down, the wall that they built from the earlier Mishnah, Machai v'noisil of noisei ad arba amos. We one can compel the other one to rebuild it up to a height of 4 amos. That's enough to prevent hezekriah. So, ad arba amos, when it comes to the height of the wall up to 4 amos, b'cheskas shenosan, then if one of them later on claims, I built it all out of my own funds, you didn't want to participate, so now I'm suing you for half the money, and the other one claims I already gave it, b'cheskas shenosan, we give him a chazaka that he already paid it, because we assume that to begin with it was made according to the specifications, and because Rashi says otherwise, if he didn't, why would he have just gone and built it by himself? He would have first gone and complained and based it. The fact that he didn't shows there's a chazaka that the other guy gave. Unless the one who's suing him brings a proof that he didn't pay him. Midalat Amos of the Milan, what about the other way around? What if they decided to build the wall higher than 4 Amos? Ein Mechaivinoi. See, we can't obligate the other guy to join in the cost of that, because you don't need that for Hezekiah. A person wants to build a wall higher because he wants to use it for a building or whatever, that's his business.
Abramus is the height of a person.
It's the average height of a person, right. 6 foot. 6 foot about, yeah.
6 foot.
Yeah. According to the Chazanish, 8 feet. Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Okay. So we don't obligate the other person to join in the course. Samach lo koiso acher. However, let's say, for example, one of them built it taller than 4 amos. Now, the other one didn't want to participate in the fifth or sixth amma and whatever, and fine, he's not obligated to. But what happens later on, for example, he built a wall parallel to that one. Now, why would he do that? Because he wants to put beams across and use it as a new house or a new building or whatever.
The one guy put up a wall
between the two chaseres, and he decided to make it, let's say, 6 amas tall.
Right.
So the other guy joined in with him with the cost up until 4 amas, and then he didn't want to pay anymore.
Yeah.
But now if the guy builds his own wall out of his own funds, also 6 amas tall, parallel to that, then you make him pay for the rest of it, because obviously, why is he doing that? He wants to use the rest of that height.
Right.
Well, if he wants to use the rest of that height, he should be participating in it. Again, it gets into the question of, are we talking Zenana Vizela Chaser? Tosfos asks that, and answers that since he's demonstrating by his actions that he wants that wall to be higher, therefore we obligate him to. Also Tosfos says, it may be that maybe we consider there is a little bit of Chaser over here, because why would the guy, what's one possibility why the guy might have made it taller than 4 amas? Maybe he wants to
commit.
Exactly, he wants to make sure no matter what, there can never be a possibility of Hezekiah. So in that case, So if he built another wall parallel to this one and near it, even if he didn't put up a roof between them yet, Megargal and all of us, then we make him pay for the entire cost of the higher wall. And then, and then it's the other way around. He has a chazaka that he did not pay it, unless he brings proof that he did, because, again, normally it wouldn't be obvious that he has to pay for that extra height. So you wouldn't have expected him to pay it in advance. Therefore, the other guy has a valid claim that unless Basin actually told you in so many words that you have to pay, I can't expect that you paid yet. So the Gemara is going to bring up a point that is going to a point about paying a debt that's going to relate to this case of our Mishnah. If somebody lends money to somebody else and they fix a date by which the loan has to be paid back. But later on, the other one comes and tells him, I paid you during that time. We don't believe him. Because he'll actually pay at the proper time instead of delaying after the time. We can't expect that he paid during that time. Now, Tosfos points out a couple of important things about this. Number one, if you don't establish a deadline for a loan, we assume that the amount is 30 days. Stam halvor is 30 yom. If you didn't set up that time, then even if he comes and claims later that I paid it during the 30 days, we would believe it.
That it was paid during the 30 days?
In other words, if I lent you money and said, I want you to pay me back by 6 months from now, let's say, and then later on you come and say I paid during the 6 months, then that's ain't an end. But if I didn't set up a time, which means stam halvar shloshim yom, and later on you came and said 20 days later I paid you back, you would be Naaman. That's one.
Why you would be Naaman?
Because no specific time was set up.
30 days.
Because there's no specific time was set up. So therefore you have the discretion to pay back any time you want. Mashenkin, if an actual date was set up, I'll buy you for Bismane. Number two, Tosfos says it has to be talking about that there are edim, that number one, the guy owes him money, and number two, that a date was set. Otherwise he could have a migri. That's Rish Lakish. Abaya v'rova d'amitavaya, whereas Abaya and Rava both say, no, ovid inish depara v'gozim, no, it could happen that a person pays during the time before the deadline is up. Zimni d'misram olezuzi, because sometimes it can happen. The person got some money, Omar, and he figures, ezoli pare, let me go pay him back as soon as possible, k'echid alele tardan, so he doesn't bug me later for it. So therefore, yes, the person could pay terchibane. Now, let's look at our Mishnah and see how that relates to this machlokes. Tanan, v'cheskas shenosan ad sheyavi raya shleinosan. We said in the first part of our Mishnah, when it comes to the first four amos of the wall, that the other neighbor has a chazaka that he already paid his share, unless proof is brought to the contrary. So, hey chidami, what's the scenario? Ilema d'omale praticha bizmani. Are we talking about that he says, as soon as you finish the four amos, I paid you? Pshita. Well, of course, then you would believe him. Rashi says that's the equivalent of one person saying, "You owe me a mona," the other person saying, "I don't owe you anything." We'll make him swear a shvur tesis, fine, but not a shvur deraisa or anything. So why would we think otherwise? Evidently, the situation in our Mishnah must be that he's claiming, "I paid you before you even finished the four amos." And we see from our Mishnah that we believe him that a person may well pay something during the time.
So I wouldn't do it here. Right.
So what? Yeah. So then that would be a contradiction to Rish Lakish. The answer is shiny hacha to call shafa b'shafa zimnehu. Yes, but it's different in our case because actually it's not the whole payment becomes due when the wall is completed. Every row of stones or bricks that he puts up on the wall creates an obligation on the other guy to share in the cost. So therefore, he may well have said, you know what, as soon as you started putting up the wall, then at that point, yeah, I went ahead and paid the whole thing. Instead of what I'm going to pay you $20 each week, and it's going to be a hassle, I'll pay you the whole thing at one time, because I can see you're going to make a four-armor tall wall over here, because it has a grid. And we would believe him. That's what the Mishnah is saying. You can't prove from that, from Rish Lakish's case, where the whole loan comes due at one time. So not necessarily a contradiction.
Because it was laid off in different steps.
Because each time, when the guy puts up the first row of bricks, and the other guy at that point becomes obligated to share in the cost of that. Second row, third row, etc. So therefore, he may well have figured, in that case, let me just get it over with to begin with. Tashma. Okay, let's look at the next part of the Mishnah. B'chezkas shaloi nasan. We said in the second part of the Mishnah where he raised the wall higher than four amos, where we said that the other guy is obligated to join in the cost if he built his own wall parallel to it, showing that he intends to use it for his own construction. Then we said b'chezkas shaloi nasan. Then we said we don't believe him just on his own say-so to say that he paid. Ad sheyavi raya shenasan, unless he brings proof that he did. So, heichidami. Again, let's ask what's the scenario. If he's claiming that as soon as I finished my wall, and therefore I knew at that point how much I'm obligated to share with you. Because remember, his wall doesn't necessarily have to be the full height of the other guy's. We're going to talk about that soon. We're going to talk about that soon. We're going to talk about that on Dach Vav. Let's say, for example, the other guy built his wall 8 amos tall, Then he built his own wall. Apparently, he built his own wall in front of it, 6 amas tall, let's say, 6, 7, whatever it is. We're going to have soon. We're going to have a machloikus. We're going to have a machloikus between Rav Huna and Rav Nachman, how much he needs to pay. Does he need to pay for the full cost of the 8, or does he only need to pay for the 6 or whatever that he built it to that height? So here, if for example, he finished his wall, and therefore he says, let's say now, automatically at that point, I know for sure how much I'm obligated to pay you. Well, why shouldn't we believe him? Am I right? Why shouldn't we believe him? At that point, he knows. We should assume that he doesn't need the Rabbanon to tell him he needs to pay. He should realize it on his own. El alav to amalei pratiach b'seich nani. Again, evidently the case is that he's claiming that I paid it during the time. While I was in the process of building my wall, before I even had decided how tall I was going to end up building my wall, at that point, I already paid you for the whole thing. And alma loy of adinish departed begozimne. And therefore, you would see fakert. A person does not usually pay during the time. So that part of the Mishnah then works according to the Shlokish. How does it work? According to Abaya and Rava. The answer is shiny hacha to amma miyemer to mechayva li rabbanon. No, because it's different in this case. Because in this case where he's building a parallel wall, still, he might think to himself, still, who says that rabbanon are going to be mechayev me to pay anything at all? Okay, I'm building a wall. Not necessarily. It's not such an obvious thing. It's not such an obvious thing that he should have to share in the cost of the other wall. Because after all, we could argue that maybe he could argue it's a case of Zenan and Zelay Chaser, for example, I'm gaining, you're not losing from it. Whatever it is exactly, it may not be such an obvious, such a muskel rishon that he should have to pay towards the cost of the wall. The halacha is that he will have to, especially, and we're going to talk about later whether he has to pay all of it. But it's not a muskel rishon. It's not something that should be so obvious to him that we should expect that while he's building his wall, he should already realize I have to pay for the cost of the whole other wall. So therefore, so Abaya and Rava could understand it that way. When it comes to a loan, obviously, you know you borrow money, you got to pay it back. Of course, then you might figure as soon as I have some cash on hand, I may as well go and then settle it before the guy sends the bill collectors after me. But here, he may think that not necessarily are they going to obligate me in the first place.
I mean, he would.
He might not.
Make a mistake thinking.
Yes, it would be a mistake, but fine. The point is, nevertheless, we can't assume that he would automatically realize that he should have to pay it, and therefore that we could believe him if it was besides that. So, who's the halach, Mike? Rav Papa and Rav Huna Bredi Rav Yeshua Abdi Kabaya. So, Rav Papa and Rav Huna Bredi Rav Yeshua Paskin Kabaya and Rava. They Paskin like Abaya and Rava. In the case of a regular loan, that yes, a person may well pay it Turkmane, and therefore we can believe him on that. Marbaravashi of a Kiddush Lakish. Marbaravashi, who was later than them, Paskin like Rish Lakish. The Hilchot Kiddush Lakish. And that is, in fact, the halacha is like Rish Lakish. Vafilu Miyasin.
You cannot.
That you cannot, that we don't assume the guy paid Turkmane. And the afilu miyasni, even if it means that you're collecting from your son. Let's say the loiva died during that 6 months or whatever. Normally, we have the rule, when you're coming to collect from Yisoyimim, haboli para b'nichsi Yisoyimim lo yipara ela b'shvur, you have to first swear that you weren't paid because the father might have paid before he died.
Haboli
para b'nichsi Yisoyimim, if you come to collect from the nechassim of Yisoyimim, lo yipara ela b'shvur. You're only allowed to do that if you first take a shvur that you weren't already paid, or that you weren't moichel the loan or whatever. Yeah. So, but in this case, we don't say that because we have the strong chazaka. We have the strong chazaka that Rish Lakish is saying that a person does not pay Tosman. Okay, Tosfos points out it's not so simple. Actually, we're only talking about over here. Actually, if we're talking about Yisoyimim who themselves are adults, because if you're talking about Yisoyimim Ketanim, you have a whole different. It's not so simple. No, Tosfos gives a few reasons why. One of them is
it doesn't apply to
Yisoyimim Ketanim for a few reasons. Tosfos says
now Petropos cannot take that.
That's not the reason. The reason, Tosfos says a few reasons. Number one, the fact that, why are we saying the Yisoyimim have the obligation to pay back the debt anyway? They didn't borrow the money. The reason is it's called Priyas Baal Choyv Mitzvah. To pay back the Baal Choyv is a mitzvah, and therefore they should do it for the schut of their father. Well, if they're Ketanim, then they're not Chayv in Mitzvah yet. Therefore, you can't obligate them.
When they grow up, can he finally collect?
When they grow up, yes, then he can take. But then he would have to take the shul. Then he would have to take the shul. But yeah.
Well, if they were 2 years old, you'd be in trouble.
Yeah. Also, Tosfos gives another reason. In order to take the case to Beis Din, you would have to bring Edim. You have to have Edim b'fnei Baal Din. You have to have the other party present. They're Ketanim. They can't be considered to be present. They don't have das. That's another reason.
Right.
Okay, and then Tosfos goes into some detail about other reasons, because it might be that he set aside money for the purpose of paying it, and therefore that they can't take from other nechassim. Okay, anyway.
So they have to wait until.
So they have to wait. So he'd have to wait till they're gedolim. Okay. Even though we usually say the rule that when you want to collect from Nichsi Yisomim, you can only collect with a Shavua, in a case like this, again, when the Yisomim are Golim, like Tosa said, you do not need to take that Shavua. Chazaka, loy ovid inish, the part of a Golizimne, because we have that strong Chazaka that a person does not pay during the time, before the time is up, and therefore we have a strong reason to assume that he taka did. Now,
there's a chazaka
that this loiva never paid back because there was a deadline set and the deadline hadn't been reached yet. Yeah. Okay. So now we have a related question.
So that's what's the conclusion.
So far that's the conclusion. So far that we're saying that the loy ovid inish to part of a gozimne, that a person does not usually pay during the time. Therefore, no. So what we were talking about all this time is, let's say, so during those 6 months, let's say, he comes and says, the loiva on his own. Remember, the malva can't demand the money from him yet because the time's not up. Right. If the loiva himself comes during that time and says, "Krapticha," do we believe him or not? We say in the end, the halacha is like the shlokish. We can't. So now we have a relationship.
Why did you can't?
Because we brought it in connection with our Mishnah.
You know, I understand, but why do we need this case of Yisomim? We knew that before already.
You wouldn't realize that this concept applies even if it's Yisomim. Usually you can only collect with a Shavua, with Yisomim from a Shavua.
Right.
But here, because you have the Chazaka in your favor, it still applies. Yet.
That's the point.
Okay. So now we have a related question. Tovil Achazman, what happens? All this time we've been talking about, if you're talking about during the time when the loan is still outstanding. During the time, not when it's still outstanding, but rather before the deadline has been reached. Now, what happened? Tovei la'achar zman. Suppose that he sued him later on. And he says, "I paid during the time." So after the 6 months are up, for example, he comes and says, "Where's my money?" And the guy says, "I paid you 2 months ago." Then once again, do we say, now again, we have the chazaka that a person does not usually pay teich manai, he's not claiming that he paid after his money. He's claiming that he paid the Seich Hasman. Well, so now, according to the Shlokish, we said we don't believe it. Fine. Is it different in this case? Do we say maybe, in this case, maybe he has a Migri, Mali the Shaker, because he has a Migri. Tevei la'ach Hasman. Now, the guy on the face of it has a Migri. Instead of saying, Krapticha Teich Hasmani, instead of saying, "I paid you within the 6 months," which would be an unusual thing to do, and we have a chazaka against it, he has a migui that he has the ability to say, "I paid you exactly when the 6 months
right.
are over."
Right.
So maybe then we should accept that. Right. Do we say even when there's a chazaka against him, maybe we still grant him a migui? And
what's
still, the chazaka is Einon and Perea
Tosmano. That Tosmano doesn't apply.
But he's saying, "I paid Tosmano." But instead of saying Tosmano, which is a weaker claim because there's a chazaka against it, he could have said, "I paid Bizmano," which would have been accepted.
So he has a migui.
Do we accept that migui? Tosfos has a bit of a long discussion over here about we do find other gemaras that say that you don't allow a migui when it's against the chazaka. So Tosfos talks about maybe the chazaka. We don't. So Tosfos says maybe over here the chazaka is a weaker chazaka than some of the other ones that we talk about in other places.
But in general, we are.
Or maybe not. Since we have a chazaka, nobody ever pays Tosmano, then. We don't allow a migui. Toshma. So again, let's look back at our Mishnah and see if we can prove that. B'cheskas shenosan ad shiyavir ayishalaynosan. Again, we have the first case of our Mishnah where to pay towards the four amos, he had the chazaka that he paid unless we have proof that he didn't. So again, let's go over the same discussion as before. Heichidom, ilei mishatovei la'achazman. Are we talking about that he came to him after the whole wall, after the four amos were finished? And he tells him, "I paid you at the time. As soon as you finished that four amos, I immediately paid you." Pshita, well, of course you would believe him. Why not? That would be the normal time for him to pay. Evidently, the Mishnah must have him tell us the Chiddush, even when he says, "I paid you while the wall was being built," and we would still believe him. And that would show that we do say, we do allow the migri even when it goes against the chazaka. And again, the answer is, like we said before, shiny halcha the whole shafa v'shafa zimnehu. It's different when it comes to a wall being built, because every layer of the wall, every course of the wall that's built, creates an obligation on him to join in paying for that one. So you guys got to go. Okay. All right. So you could say in that case, then we would believe him that he paid during the time. Like we said before, not necessarily could you apply that to a regular case of a halva.
what do we know that the obligation comes for each row?
Because that's the logic of it. As the wall is being built, that more and more you're preventing one person from walking into the other one's chatzer. You're helping that you have more and more privacy. Eventually, you get to the
you
point.
You have privacy too. You don't.
No, because eventually you get more and more. I mean, it comes to the point when the guy's gonna have to stand on his tiptoes to look over. You know, whatever.
So that's when it's finished.
No, but the point is, it can be up until that point, though. You can still have the guy will only see you when he's standing, not when he's sitting, etc. Tashma, midalat amos olamayla edmo. And also, I mean, the logic of it is the whole wall was supposed to be built jointly by them. So every time a row of it is finished, throughout the life of the thing, they're supposed to be jointly paying towards it. Therefore, we would assume that he did that. Yeah. Okay. Tashma, come, let's look at the next part of the Mishnah. Midalat amos olamayla edmo chay benayse. We said that if it goes beyond four amos, then we don't obligate the other person. But if he put another wall parallel to it, then you do make him pay for it. And again, let's ask. Unless he brings proof that he actually paid, we assume that he did. Okay. So, are we talking about that he sued him for the payment after the wall was finished? And he says, I paid you at the time I finished my wall. Am I lying? Well, why shouldn't we believe him? Same logic as before. As soon as he finished his wall, he knows that he has to. Evidently, we're talking about that he claims I paid while my wall was under construction. Again, that should show that we don't give him a migui b'mkayim chazaka, because against it you have a chazaka that he doesn't say not perei b'seich mane, and therefore you should say, and therefore that's why you don't believe him. Yeah. And the answer is shiny ha chadama miyemun mechayveli rabbanon. Same logic as before, because he says that the rabbanon may not be mechayvi at all, and therefore there's no reason for me to pay while it's being built. But that doesn't show for a regular case of Bova. So the Gemara has basically sort of repeated itself in two different cases. Mefoshim say this is one of the examples where you have different discussions took place in different Bate Medrash. One didn't necessarily know of the other. When Ravina and Ravashi assembled the Gemara in the form that we have it, then they put both, each one in its relevant place. But yeah. Oh. All right.
The conclusion is like we said before, in other words.
Yeah, pretty much the same.
Because right. Mano, there's no proof.
Right. Well, so in the end, we said no. So we said, the Sokh's Mano, the halacha is like Rish Lakish. If he came on his own and said, the Sokh's Mano, I paid, we don't believe him.
Right.
We don't believe him. But now we're saying, La'achazman, then we're saying that we haven't finished yet. Wait. We haven't finished this discussion yet. What happens if he asks him for it? La'achazmanai. Do we give him a migri b'mkayim chazaka or not? Toshma. Okay, I'll bring a different proof though. From a Mishnah in Shavuos. One person says to the other, Monali biyotcha, you owe me a money. Omalei hein. The other one says, yes, you're right, I owe you a money. Lamacha omalei tnevili. The next day he says to him, okay, well you said yesterday you owe me a money, hand it over. And Rashi points out, when he said Amalei Hein, means that it was in front of Edim. So he said to him, so he admitted in front of Edim that he owes to him. The next day he says, give it to me. Im Amar Nesatib L'cha Potter. If the other person, if Shimon answers, I gave it to you, then he's Potter from Ashura. Because then basically he's, on the face of it, because he's a Kofar Hakol. Whereas if he says, you don't have it in my hand, which we're going to say in a second, either way he's saying I don't owe it to you, but we're going to explain what the difference is between the Satav L'cha and Ein L'cha B'yadi. Ein L'cha B'yadi, remember, could mean a few different things. It could mean I never borrowed it from you, it could mean I paid you back already. The Satav L'cha definitely... Ein L'cha B'yadi means I don't owe you anything. Now why not? I paid you back already, I never borrowed it in the first place. Nesatib l'chol clearly means I gave it to you. So we're saying, if he says Nesatib l'chol, then he's potter mashur. But if he says Ein l'chol b'yadi, you don't have it in my hand, then he's chayev. Now, what would be the distinction? My lab, Nesatib l'chol, d'amalei praticha b'zmani. L'chora, the difference would be that if you say Nesatib l'chol means that he's saying, I paid you at the appropriate time, at the end of the 6 months or whatever. And what would Ein L'cha B'yadi mean? Means that you don't even have a valid reason to claim anything from me in the first place because I paid it to you even before the deadline was up. Well, if we learn it that way, the Katani Chayev, and the Mishnah is still saying that he's Chayev Ashur because he has Edim against him. Alma b'makom chazak aleihem minim.
B'serch
zmanei.
You should not be believed.
We don't believe him. Katani chayim. Alma b'makom chazak aleihem minim mali b'shaker. Showing, in other words, that we don't say the migui where he has a chazaka against him. Here there's a chazaka of einon and pareh b'serch zmanei. So there you could prove it. Think about his life. Not necessarily, because my Eim L'Chabayadi, because you could understand the Mishnah to be saying, what does Eim L'Chabayadi mean? Lo ho yudvar ma'olam. But no. Nesativ L'Cho would mean I paid you. The Sarech Mane, L'Achaz Mane, whatever. Eim L'Chabayadi Klum would mean I never borrowed it in the first place. Lo ho yudvar ma'olam. It never happened, I never borrowed that money.
So he's Kofa'akul.
And in that, well, it's a different kind of Kofa'akul. Why are we saying in that case that he's Chayef to pay? The Omamar, because we have a general rule that the Chamim said, if a person says, I never borrowed money, is the equivalent of saying, I never paid. Because you wouldn't have paid if you didn't borrow money. In other words, therefore, so, like this, there are edim that he said in their presence that I owe that money. Now, when he comes and wants to contradict himself and says, I never borrowed it, what we do is, it's vaguely similar to a concept called pagdin and dibura, that we divide up what he's saying. By saying, I didn't borrow, It means, in other words, he's conceding that he never paid it. So what happens? In other words, you have Adim who say that yesterday you said you did owe him money. Now you're telling us you didn't pay it. Well, then pay up. You're saying you didn't borrow it. We have Adim that contradict you that said yesterday you did borrow it.
That's if we equate Lo-Levisi to
Lo-Levisi. But that's what I'm saying. When you say Lo-Levisi, it's the equivalent of saying Lo-Paraiti. Let's look in the Rashi. Let's hold on by Olam, which should clarify it. The last line of the four wide lines on top starts. Well, hold on by Olam, Hilka Chayev L'Shalom. So therefore, we obligated to pay. Shareish Edim Shahud Levisneim, because there are Edim that he admitted to him in front of him. The Kivin to Omer Lo-Levisi. So by saying I didn't borrow, Moida Hu Shalay Paro, it amounts to saying I admitting that I never paid it. The Shakomi She'ena Loive Ena Pareya. If you didn't borrow it, you didn't pay it. So therefore we consider it as if he said I didn't pay. Now, if he had claimed that I paid it, we would believe him. I feel a love of Bifnei Edim, even if he borrowed the money in front of Edim, the Kaimalan, Bishavuas, because we know in Shavuas Hamavas Khavera Edim and Sarah part of Edim. Even if you borrowed money with Edim, you don't necessarily have to pay him back with Edim.
That's the difference
in the Mishnah that we're quoting over here. If he says Nisatev Lacha, he'll be potter because okay. I borrowed money from you in the presence of Edim. I admitted in the presence of Edim that I owed you the money. But between then and now, I paid it. I don't need Edim to prove that I paid it. You want to claim that I didn't? Good to prove.
You don't need a
shvur for that. You won't need a shvur deraita because you're kofer hakol. As opposed to if you're saying I never borrowed money from you in the first place, that is the equivalent of saying I never paid. We throw out what you're saying. I didn't borrow because you have Edim against that, and therefore you're obligated to pay.
So what do we? So
we don't necessarily have to say that the Mishnah there is distinguishing between whether you paid the Soch Mano or the Achaz Mano. You could say that regardless, you claim you paid, then that's fine. Yeah.
And therefore,
that wouldn't be a proof one way or the other. So therefore, that wouldn't be a proof one way or the other to our case. The Gemara is actually we leave the question open. And therefore, it's one of those cases where you have a suffix and in Dine Mominus, therefore you can't force him to pay because the guy can argue that, again, Kimli, he can argue that I hold that I have a migri even if there's a chazaka against it, and therefore you can't obligate him to pay. So, all right. Getting back now to the topic of our Mishnah about the wall that the guy built and the other wall that the guy built parallel, that the other neighbor built parallel to it. Mm-hmm. We said if you put another wall parallel to Megagol and all of us Sakohola, then we make him pay for the entire cost of the wall, because obviously he's going to use it. Amar Rav Huna, Samach L'Pauga, Samach L'Kula. So Rav Huna says, even if he only made his wall half the size of the other one, or any fraction of the other one, Samach L'Kula is the equivalent of having made it parallel to the whole other wall, which means both Rashi and Tosfos say, we mean whether horizontally or vertically. So I built my wall like this. You built another wall, let's say, only this tall.
Right.
Nevertheless, or you built it only this wide, not the full width of the wall. Nevertheless, you're going to have to pay for the whole wall because you may well extend your wall later. Just because you only built part of it now doesn't necessarily mean you're going to leave it that way permanently. Rav Nachman says, no. L'may de samach samach, l'may de lo samach. No, you only go according to what he's actually parallel to, vertically and horizontally. You don't make him pay for more.
So if he's a smart guy, he can put a tiny...
tiny piece of wool and then extend it as much
as he extends it, I'll have to pay more. But Yeah, but we can't obligate him at the beginning to as if he's going to do the whole thing. Yeah. Actually, there's again one of these little interpolations in Rashi that that says over here the idea behind it is not the idea. Rashi himself says the reason why Rav Huna would say you have to pay for the whole thing is because since he started, we can assume he's eventually going to finish. He's eventually going to finish making the whole thing the same height or the same width or whatever, and then he's going to end up he's going to put up a roof and whatever. So therefore, we make him pay right away. Then there's an interpolation of Tosfos in Rashi that says that what it means that later on he's going to end up not only using the whole height of the wall, he's going to end up he may even go higher. He may even build a second wall on top of it.
So
therefore, for example, even he only built his own wall, let's say 6 amas tall, and the other guy's wall is 8 amas tall. Nevertheless, you can assume he may well end up extending his wall.
So we have to make him pay.
So therefore, we have to make him pay for the whole thing. That's a point of Huna. Again, a point of Nachman. Not.
The halacha.
Wait. The halacha is like Nachman in Dine usually. However, umoydir of Huna b'kaun of a lufta. However, Rav Huna would agree that he doesn't have to pay the whole thing if it is a kaun of a lufta. Okay. Rashi explains like this. Kaun of a lufta means an attachment at a corner, which means Rashi learns basically like this. Let's say this is the wall between the chaseres. Now let's say Reuven's house rather adjoins that wall.
Right.
Now, what does Reuven do? He builds another wall over here and builds like a little structure over here next to his house, next to that wall. So then we can see the only reason he's doing it is as an extension to his house. He's not necessarily planning to use the full width of the full length of the wall. He's just using it for that little one area. So therefore, you can't make him pay for the whole thing. Just for the area that he extended from his house. Yeah. Tosfos quotes a different explanation that what we mean is, let's say, so he has, here's the wall that was built between the chaseres. Here's his own wall. What he did is he built his own wall, and then at the end of it, he made it go a little bit in this direction. Well, that demonstrates he doesn't plan to extend it further like this.
Right.
It shows he plans to stop over here.
Right.
So that would be kauna, a corner, the lufta, and then, okay, so Tosfos explains that's kauna. Tosfos explains kauna and lufta are two separate things. Kauna means that. Lufta means where he demonstrates that he's not planning to make the wall any taller. Namely, what he does is he makes the top of the wall on a slant so that the rain will run off it or whatever. Well, if he's making it on a slant, he's obviously not planning to make it any taller. So therefore, sort of Huna will agree in those cases that he shouldn't have to pay for the whole thing because obviously he's showing he's only using a small part of it. Yeah. Umoder of Nachman ba'afriza over kavata dekshuri. On the other hand, Rav Nachman will agree that he has to pay for the full length the width of the wall if he put up on his wall an afriza or kavata dekshuri. Afriza, Rashi explains, is a big thick piece of wood that you put along the full length of the wall. What you do is if you're planning to use the wall as a base for beams that you're going to put ceiling beams across, you put them on such a piece of wood because if you put them directly on the stone, then eventually it'll rot away from the dampness of the stones.
Right.
So if you put up an afriza then, or which is a thick beam, like
an extension beam.
It's like, here's your wall. You put a beam across the full, along the full length and across the full width of it, in order that then you can use it as a basis for beams that are going to go this way.
Okay.
There's a word for it in English. I don't know what it's called. I think it's called a king post or something. I don't know. Whatever. Anyway, so if you put up an afriza, or Rashi says, what if you don't have a big thick piece of wood like that? Instead, then what you do is you drill holes in the wall. And you put, you make square holes in the walls, put thick beams into them, and you put wooden frames in those holes. Same idea. You don't want your heavy beams to be directly touching the stone because they'll rot.
You're going to put your beams on top of these frames?
No, not on top of. You're going to put them into the frame. You drill square holes in your wall.
Yeah.
You punch out square holes in your wall.
Right.
You put pieces of wood, that's the kavata dekshuri, you put in frames of wood inside those, and then when you put in a beam, you're going to stick it in.
The beam is going to be on top of these.
The beam is going to be stuck through that hole, and sticking out a little bit on the other side of the wall.
But not touching the stone directly,
exactly. Yeah. So that's a frizo kavata dekshuri, a point of Rashi. Tosfos, again, explains that So therefore, the point is, if you're doing either of those things, if you're putting up an afrizo, a kavata de kshuri, obviously you plan to put up beams, heavy beams, and why would you be doing that? Because you want to make a second floor. That means you're going to be using the full height of the other guy's wall. Therefore, if Nachman will agree, you're going to have to pay for the full height of the wall. Tosfos explains that a frieza is talking about, let's say, for example, normally when you finish a wall, the end of it is smooth.
Yeah.
But let's say, for example, you made that the end of your wall is not. You have rows of stones going in and out, bricks going in and out like that. Obviously, you eventually plan to extend it. That's a frieza, Tosfos says. And Kavata de Kshuri, Tosfos says, is basically similar to Rashi. You made a place where you want to put beams showing that you intend to extend the wall vertically.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Anyway, so the machlokas between Rav Huna and Rav Nachman would be in a case where you don't have any of those things. You put up a normal wall, but you may well decide at some later date to extend it horizontally or vertically, and Rav Huna will say we make them higher for the whole thing to begin with, and Rav Nachman will say that. Another din. Amar Rav Huna, Beit Kavi Lehavi Chazaka. Suppose, for example, so you have these two people who have the wall between their chaseres. One of them decided he wants it taller than 4 amos, so he built it higher than 4 amos, and as our Mishnah said, the other guy, Reuben, is not obligated to share in the cost. What happens now is, as part of the project of building the wall, Shimon, while he was building the wall, put in recesses in the wall, Beikavi, literally means windows. They're similar to what Rashi explained at Kavata de Kshuri, holes in the wall, part way or all the way through, that you could use to put beams into. Now, on the face of it, doesn't Reuben have the ability to argue then, well, I already paid you towards the higher height of the wall. If not, why would you put in holes for me to eventually put in beams? Obviously, I must have paid my share of the cost.
Right.
He's saying, no, we don't consider that to be a chazaka. We don't consider that to be that he can, that he has proof thereby. We don't believe him that he paid. Why? But Afagab the Ovid Lehimalti, even if Shimon not only made the holes in the wall, but also put in the wooden frames,
we still don't believe
Reuben. Why? The Amalei, because Shimon has the ability to argue like this. I didn't put in those because it means that I gave you permission or that I was willing to forego the cost or that you already paid the cost or whatever. Kaket, I put them in because I'm thinking ahead.
We're talking about the owner of the wall.
We're talking like this. Shimon is the one who built the part of the wall higher than 4 hours.
Right.
He put in these windows or recesses or whatever that are already, if Reuben were to want to put in beams into them, he would be able to. They're already for him. Nevertheless, Reuben can't do that without Shimon's permission unless he has proof that he actually paid towards it. Just the fact that the holes exist is not proof. Because Shimon can say, I was thinking ahead. Amina, I figured, if you ever decide to pay me off or whatever for the cost that I did for the wall, and then you want to put beams in it, I don't want at that point I'm going to have these holes made in an already built wall, and then it's going to weaken the wall going and doing construction on an already built wall. I figured, let me think ahead and make the wall already with these things ready if you ever decide, if it ever turns out that you have the ability to use them, namely that you pay me for half the cost of the wall, I want it to be ready.
In other words, it doesn't show that you paid me, it shows just that I want
it. It shows that I'm thinking ahead, that I designed it so that you're so
strong.
So that if you ever do pay me for my share of the cost, for your share of the cost over here, then I will give you permission to use this, or then you'll be able to, you own part of the wall, you will be able to use that for your beam. Yeah. Okay. Now, some more dinim as far as Chazaka. Amar Rav Nachman, achzik lehudi leachzik lekshuri. Suppose that one person makes a chazaka about that he's able to put in hudi. Hudi are thinner beams. Now, so again, there's another one of these interpolations in Rashi that explains like this. We're going to learn later on in the Masechta, we're going to learn about chazaka, as in the chazaka of 3 years of a field, where once you've been in possession of a field or a house or whatever for 3 years and the other guy wasn't leicha, we assume it's yours. Here we're talking a different kind of chazaka. We're going to actually talk about more of this kind of chazaka much more towards the end of the third parak. Namely like this. If I have a courtyard, and you come in and do certain things in it where those show a certain bias over it, those show a certain ownership, we would expect, I'm not going to waste 3 years. I'm going to be mocha right away. If I'm not mocha right away, you have a chazaka, you are entitled to continue doing those things in this joint chazaka or whatever, because obviously I allowed you to do it. So now, Rav Nachman is saying over here that if, for example, one person put in, so let's say, for example, the one person, the one person on one side of the wall put in, use these holes to put in hurdi, which are thin beams. Loy achzik l'kshuri, he does not have a valid chazaka to say that instead I'm allowed to switch them out for heavier beams. That's fine. Maybe the other guy, the fact that he has the ability to put hurdi, fine. If the other guy had objected, he would have said so right away. But nevertheless, he doesn't have the right to swap them out for kshuri, which are much heavier. L'kshuri achzik l'hurdi, but if the other way around, if he had a chazaka to put heavier beams, then he can switch them out for lighter ones.
And then can he re-switch to heavier ones?
I guess, yeah. Yeah, I guess so.
If he started with heavier.
He started with heavier ones, yeah. Rav Yosef Omar, achzik l'hurdi, achzik l'kshuri. Rav Yosef says, no, doesn't matter. Either way, you had lighter ones, you can still start using heavier ones instead. You have a chazak on it. The guy didn't object. Obviously, he doesn't mind you using it. Obviously, either he was meichel, or you did, in fact, pay him off for his half of the construction cost or whatever it is. Similar kind of thing, Ikadamri, another version of this discussion, Amr of Nachman, Achzik Lahurdi, Achzik Lakshuri, Lakshuri, Achzik Lahurdi. Another version is that Rav Nachman himself said that, yes, it doesn't matter either way. You made a chazaka for one, you're entitled to use the other. So not Rav Yosef had to say it, but Rav Nachman himself said it. That's the halacha in the end, but we don't know whether it's Rav Nachman himself said it or whether Rav Yosef said it.
But what?
That this din about that you can go back and forth between Hurdi and Kshuri.
That's the halacha?
Yes. Another case, Omer of Nachman, Achzik l'Natvi, Achzik l'Shafti. Suppose a person made a chazaka that he's entitled to. Now, you can have, let's say, for example, I have my house adjoining your chatzer. Mm-hmm. Rain runs off my roof. There's two different ways it can be done. Natvi, which is that it will drip all over the place, along the full length of my roof, or Shafti, where I put up over there a gutter and it all comes down in one place. If I have a chazaka previously that I could have my rainwater drip off into your chaser and you didn't object, achzik l'shafchi, then you have a chazaka that can also be used instead to put up a gutter and make it all go into one place.
So how long can you put it?
Indefinitely.
No, but the chazaka.
It has to be basically that the guy saw it and didn't object. No, it has to be that the guy saw it. Pretty much immediately, we'll learn. At the end of the third paragraph, we'll learn there are some things where there's never a chazaka on, some things we need a certain amount of time. Even for this, actually, I should mention, there are the Tosfos over here in Rashi says that it's not that you need 3 years, you just need the other guy saw it and didn't object. There's actually several different positions among the Rishonim whether that's correct or not, whether you need 3 years or whether you don't, or also do you need a taina or not. When it comes to chazaka of karka, the 3 years chazaka, we're going to learn later on that you need a taina. It can't just be, for example, that I'm living here 3 years. Okay, so it was unoccupied, so I moved in and nobody bothered me these last 3 years. That's not considered a valid chazaka. A valid chazaka would be, for example, I bought it, I was given it as a gift, I yarshin it or whatever, and more than 3 years have passed and I've lost my deed. Over here also, does it mean that he needs actual proof that at one time the guy allowed it or not? They have a four-way machlokes among the Rishonim on it. Okay. Rav Nachman says, if he had a chazaka that his rainwater can drip off into the other guy's chaser, he's also entitled instead to put up a gutter and let it all come into one place. On the other hand, achzik l'shafchi le'achzik l'natvi, but if he has a chazaka that he can have a rain gutter that drains into the other guy's chaser, he doesn't have the ability to take down that gutter and let the rain just drip all over. Again, Rav Yosef Amar, after achzik l'shafchi, achzik l'natvi, again, Rav Yosef disagrees. Ikadamri, and again, you have a different version. Amr of Nachman, Achzik l'Shafchi, Achzik l'Natvi, L'Natvi, Achzik l'Shafchi. According to the second version, Rav Nachman said that it doesn't matter either way. Aval l'tzripa d'urbani loy. However, according to the second version, Rav Nachman is saying there is a difference, though, whether we're talking about a regular roof or whether we're talking about a tzripa d'urbani. A tzripa d'urbani we learned about in Bava Metzia. It's a hut made out with a roof made out of arava branches. Now the difference is a normal roof, some rain will drip off the edges of it, not so much. But with a stupid opening like this, you'll have a constant drip. Not even through the roof, off the edges of it.
Off the edges of it.
But because it's made out of branches, you're going to have a great deal more dripping. Therefore, Rav Nachman says that's not good enough. If you had a regular roof over there and you want to replace it with a tzrifa d'urbani, you don't have the ability to do that without the other guy objecting. But this is a new use.
If you started with tzrifa d'urbani, you cannot.
You could go the other way, but if you started with a regular roof, you can't go to a tzrifa d'urbani.
Right.
And say, well, I have the right to let my regular roof drip there, therefore I can also have
if
the right to
regular
drip
durability. Durability.
That's true for durability, exactly right. Yeah. Although my fortune wants to point out the difference is that true for durability keeps on dripping for hours after the rain is done, like a lucky sucker, yeah. Rav Yosef Amar Pilut Tzripa D'Urbani, Rav Yosef says that not once you have the chazaka that you can let your rule your way run for the other, then it can even work for a Tzripa D'Urbani. And in fact, other Rav Yosef, Rav Yosef one time actually passed in practical halacha about such a case where a person wanted to put up a Tzripa D'Urbani and let the water drip into the other guy's chazer, and Rav Yosef allowed it. Because he already had a chazaka that his regular roof could drip water into there. Amr of Nachman, Amr of Avraham. Hamaske bayis lachavera bevira, bevira gdola. If somebody rents an apartment to somebody else in a large building, so this is basically exactly what it sounds like. You have a large building divided into various units, right. And you rented somebody one of those units. Mishtamish b'zizeha, that person is allowed to use the ledges that stick out from the wall along the full length of the building, not even the part that's outside or that's outside his apartment. He's allowed to use the ledges along the full length of the building, or b'ksaleha, and he's allowed to use the walls, meaning the tops of the walls themselves, ad dalad amos, up to four amos. Ovia coastal thickness of the wall. The walls themselves, you can use the walls up to a height of 4 amos. All that is considered to be like an easement to him. And therefore he can use that.
He can use the height of the wall?
He can use because he owns one apartment and because he rents one apartment in this building, therefore now if there are ledges anywhere along the length of the building, he's allowed to use them to put things. If there are the walls, he's allowed to, for example, hang things from or whatever. Outside the building, yeah. He's also allowed to use the top of the wall if it's a place where the minhag is to do that. The top of the wall, Rashi explains. Let's say, for example, he rented a second floor apartment.
Right.
So therefore, it's close to the tops of the walls. And yeah, he can use the tops of the walls to put up things, that he wants. However, he does not have the ability to use the tarbet sapadni. Tarbet sapadni, tarbet means a garden. Apadni means of the palace. So Rashi describes when you build a big fancy building like that, you usually put in front of it, you put a little garden. You put a little garden so it looks nice. So now you have you have an entryway to this. You're not allowed to hang things or whatever. That's just meant for people to look at and enjoy the view or whatever. It's not really meant for people to walk around in. Therefore, you, the renter of the apartment, do not have rights to hang anything or use anything in that type of apartment.
A garden roof?
A garden, sort of like a patio, basically.
On the roof?
Not on the roof, necessarily. No, in front of the building. Look in Rashi, the first line of the narrow line. Derech bonei birach hashuva, generally when people build an important fancy building like that, laniach lakeneged pesach atrak in a choshev shuva, so they put in front of the door to the main most important part of it, the building, they put over there kain ginach tana, a little garden, la'avir, for air, va'olim v'dashayim, grass grows there, v'yafa amar aleinayim, it looks nice, it makes the building look nicer, v'sham ein reshus lozeh, l'ksalim klum. Now the person who rents an apartment there does not have the right to hang anything on the walls over there. Shein osur l'kanes specific, because that little garden is not meant to go into.
So that's in front of the building.
Yeah, that's in front of the building. That's Rav Nachman had said that in the name of Rava Balabua. However, Rav Nachman didday, Amar Afkel b'Tavet Sapadni. Rav Nachman himself disagreed with that and said, no, you're even allowed to use the Tavet Sapadni. But you, the renter of the apartment in this building, do not have the right to use the fenced-in area behind the building. That wasn't included in the rental.
In front, yes, but not in back.
The in front is a chotzer that everybody uses, but what's in back is not. The Rava Amar Afkelu Rechava Shacharei Abatim. Rava says no, it's even included that he can also use the area in the back. Amar Ravina, talking more about these dinim of chazaka.
So what's the?
So the conclusion is like Rava. The conclusion is like Rava that you can use all of them. Amar Ravina, Haik Shura de Metalalta. If you have a beam of a sukkah. Now, we're not talking about a sukkah for sukkahs. We're talking about just a sukkah like a person might put up for shade or whatever. If he put it, if he rested one end of it on the other person's wall and the other person did not object within 30 days, loy havid chazakah. That's not considered a valid chazakah. Because within 30 days, the person doesn't mind. Okay, he needs it for a couple of days, then he'll take it down. I'm willing to overlook that. Bossa, plus in Yemen, have a chazakah. But after 30 days, it's considered a chazakah. If the other guy didn't object, then he has a permanent right to keep it there. Tosfos says we're actually talking back, this is actually referring back to the Mishnah. This is what we said in the Mishnah, b'chezkas shenosan, b'chezkas shalai nosan. During the first 30 days, it's b'chezkas shalai nosan. Because we can assume during the 30 days, he himself may figure it's only a temporary thing. After 30 days, b'chezkas shenosan, because then we can assume already he knows he's going to be doing it permanently. The e sukkah de mitzvah. However, if we're not talking about a sukkah for shade, but rather we're talking about a sukkah for sukkahs, then the amount of time is less. Ad shiva yomim lo have a chazaka, up to 7 days, the length of sukkahs, it's not considered a chazaka. But vasa shiva yomim have a chazaka after 7 days. If he leaves it up, then obviously the other guy should have objected. If he doesn't, then it's considered a chazaka. Again, according to Tosfos, it would be how much he actually, whether we consider they paid or not. Tosfos says actually not really 7 days, sukkahs is 8 days. But that's what we mean. No, but even in Eretz Yisrael, Shmini Atzeres is 8 days. So you can't take that with Sukkah, Shmini Atzeres. Right. There are Mephoshim, actually, who learn that the 7 days means 7 days after Sukkah. We know there are people who leave up their Sukkah until Hanukkah time, even later. But within 7 days, it's normal a person takes down a Sukkah within 7 days after the Yom. However, the Ichabre Betina, however, if he didn't just put the beam there, if he actually attached it with cement, La'alter have a chazaka, then it would immediately be a chazaka because then it's obviously he's intending to do it as a permanent thing. So then obviously the guy is Mocha, then that prevents the chazaka, yeah. Okay. Rabbi, Shnei Batim Mishnei Tzidi Rosh Hashanah. Suppose you have two people's houses are on opposite sides of Rosh Hashanah. Now, they both have roofs, and sometimes the person uses their roof. So what do we do? What do we do to prevent a problem of hezekiah? The one person has to make a fence around for half his roof. Now, what the point is like this: we're not going to obligate them both. I mean, obviously they need to build a mica to prevent somebody from falling off the roof, but that only needs to be 10 tefachim. Here we're talking about a mica that's being done because of hezekiah. So hold this up, please. We're talking about a mica for hezekiah. We're not going to obligate both of them to build an entire wall along the full length of their roof. We don't need to put them to that expense. And we're not going to say one of them should and the other one shouldn't. Which one is going to do it?
Right.
What we do is we make each of them build half a wall. The one builds a mica along half his roof. The other one does a mica along this half of the roof. One not opposite the other, meaning one covers this part, one covers the other part. Umadif, and they make it overlap.
What do you mean they make it?
They make it overlap. In other words, for example, let's say each of these roofs is 20 feet wide.
Right.
So what we do is then I build a mica, let's say 11 amos wide from beginning from the east side and going 11 amos toward the west. You build one 11 amos going from the west, going towards the east. So
right.
There's an overlap of two amos in the middle.
Right.
So if you were to stand in the middle, you'd be prevented from seeing the other guy's roof by a double wall.
Right.
Everywhere else, you're prevented by a single wall. The point of that is you don't want the guy should be able to stand on that corner over here and be able to look in. That's why you need the overlap. Okay. So the question is, my area of Shusar Abim, why do we need to mention that they're on two sides of the Shusar Abim? After the Rosh Hashanah Yochid Nami, wouldn't the same thing apply? Let's say the two roofs were on two sides of Rosh Hashanah Yochid. Let's say, for example, the two roofs were on the same level as were on the same level as somebody's chaser. Let's say the answer is no. Rosh Hashanah Rabbim is tzrichalei. No, but he needed to say more of a chiddush where they're on the two sides of Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. Mao detema, because you might think one of them should be able to say namele, one should be able to say to the other. Look, why should I have to put up a wall, Bechlau? You anyway need to put up a wall to prevent people from Rosh Hashanah Abim from watching you while you're on your roof. So you anyway need to put up a wall. I'm not concerned about that at all. I'm not worried about my privacy. Why should I have to put up an 11 foot wide wall to prevent on my side, and you're going to put one on your side to prevent your hezekiah? Me, I don't care about my hezekiah.
Because his side is on Rosh Hashanah Abim.
Both of them are facing Rosh Hashanah Abim. So why doesn't the person on this side have the ability to say, look, you are concerned about hezekiah.
Right.
Fine. Hezekiah, you don't just have for me. You have for B'nai Rosh Hashanah Adam as well. You do it all on your side. Me, I don't care about Hezekiah. I don't have nothing to hide on my roof. Therefore, you go and do the whole thing. Hamash Malan, that is the Chiddush. The Amalei, because the other guy has the ability to argue, there's the Chiddush that nevertheless, that each of them has to contribute their part. The Amalei, because the other person can argue, the difference is, Rabin being Mama Chazuli, below Yolei Chazuli. The difference is, the B'nai Rosh Hashanah Rabbim are only going to see me by day. They're not going to see me by night, because by night nobody's in Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. Ask Ben being Mama Ben below Yachazuli. You're going to see me either by day or by night. So I have to be more concerned about you. Inami, or another point, Rabin ki ka'im no Chazuli ki yasib no Lei Chazuli. The Rabbim are only going to see me when I'm standing, not when I'm sitting. You will be able to see me whether I'm standing or sitting.
Right.
And another difference, Rabim ki ma'ainu chazuli ki lo ma'ainu lo chazuli. Another difference is that Rabim will only see if they pay attention. If they gap to look at my roof, they're going to see. But if they don't pay attention, they won't. Ask me'mela nami chazuli. You're going to see me no matter what because you're not necessarily too close. They're on two sides of Rosh Hashanah Rabim. But the point is, they're both on the same level.
Right.
Yes. Actually, Tosfos points out that in a way, not in a way, we still have to be that we're talking, there's a Rosh Hashanah Rabbim between them. If it was just one roof immediately adjacent to the other, then the Gemara is going to say that no, then you don't need such a mitzvah.
What do you mean immediately adjacent? Exactly.
In other words, if you have, here's my building and here's your building, and our roofs touch, let's say, then there's not an obligation to put, then there's not such an obligation to put up a fence because of Hezekiah.
Why?
Because the logic is, we're going to say later, because the logic is, people don't use their roofs as often, but the point is, as soon as the other guy is in his roof, you're going to realize it. And therefore, you can make sure, anyway, roofs aren't used as much as chaser. So chaser, you always are using.
Right.
It was an extension of the house in those days. And you even do semi-private things over there. Therefore, you have hezekiah. When you have a roof, there's less of that. So if you have the two roofs, they're on the two sides of Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, the thing is, I might be up on my roof minding my own business, and all of a sudden you come, and because you're on the other side of Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, I don't notice you, and meanwhile you're looking over at me. Mashenkin, if the two roofs are adjacent, Adarabah, as soon as you come up to your roof, I'm going to realize it.
The other case is when the roofs are a different height, should we think?
We said at the beginning of the Masechta like this. If you have a roof adjacent to a chatzar, then you definitely need, because then the person who uses the chatzar argues that a chatzar is constantly in use, whereas you might use your roof at any time, I don't know when, and you'll come and watch me while I'm in my chatzar. Therefore, we need a fence.
Okay.
Now we're talking about cases of roof versus a roof.
Right.
But the difference is like this. If the two roofs are on two sides of Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, then you're in the worst situation of all. On the one hand, the guy can watch you from his roof. On the other hand, because they're on the two sides of Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, you may not... One roof is on one side of the street and the other is on the other side of the street.
Right.
The problem is, Reuven, who's on the even side of the street, is going to be up on his roof doing his own thing, minding his own business or whatever. Meanwhile, Shimon is going to start coming and peeking in on him. And Reuven is not even going to realize because it's across Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. Therefore, you need this double mic. As opposed to if the two roofs were immediately next to each other, like the row houses here in Crown Heights, if they're both on the same side of the street and one's next to the other, if I'm on my roof and you come up onto yours, I'll immediately realize it and then be able to, yeah. So that's it.
No matter how big the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim is?
Doesn't matter. Rosh Hashanah Rabbim is 16 amos.
Or more.
Omamar, so okay, let's go back to what we said. Zer it's a Michael Hatzi Gaga, Zer it's a Michael Hatzi Gaga. We said each one makes a Micah for half his roof, Zeshalai Kenegat. They're one not opposite the other, meaning on opposite sides of the roof, Umadif, and they overlap a little bit. The question is Pshita. Well, once we establish that you need to do it, then isn't it obvious that each one does only half? The answer is, let's say one person went ahead and put up his mica for his half before they even came to Beis Din. Then he goes to the other guy and says, you need to do on your half. I shouldn't have to do the whole thing on mine. So, you would think then, maybe, so okay, Reuven started building the mica on his own. He was worried about his privacy, so he started building his half mica. Now he comes and takes Shimon to Beis Din. Maybe Shimon should have the ability to argue, look, if it was a new thing to start with, fine, we both have to do it equally, sure. But since you already started, you finish the job. You make one whole mica for your roof. What about the cost? Fine, I'll share with you half the cost. You take payment and you make the whole thing. Kamash Malon, that is the Chiddush, that he doesn't have the ability to say that, because Reuven can answer him, look, ask my time, now why is it that you don't want to make one in the first place? It's not just because of the cost. It's because Mishum the Mitra Ashita, because building something new on the roof line of your house is going to weaken the wall. I also have the same problem. If I build an entire mica, it's going to overburden my wall, and it's more likely to collapse sooner. Therefore, I don't want to have to build any more of it than necessary. You have to share in actually building one on your half of the wall, and that way neither of our walls is overburdened. All right. Stop here. And, yeah.